The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by Fulfill.io, the ERP built to streamline complex e-commerce operations. There's a lot going on in today's modern e-commerce business. Perhaps you're tracking inventory across 3PLs, Amazon, and your own warehouses. Maybe you're selling on 8 different platforms. Maybe you're bringing in raw products, manufacturing them, and you need to track them all the way through beginning to finished goods. And maybe you're selling to big box stores wholesale and need something that can handle EDI. Maybe all the above. Well, Fulfill thrives at streamlining and automating all this complexity, including the scenarios I mentioned above and many more, to streamline your business and save you time and money. And their 100% open API unlocks truly unlimited potential in terms of custom automations. So if your duct tape solution of a few SaaS apps, VAs, and Zapier's apps is beginning to break down, you need to check out Fulfill. You can learn more about them and how to streamline your business today at ecommercefuel.com/Fulfill. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by OneClick Upsell, the largest and most popular upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 Shopify Plus stores. Man, it is hard to get people to your store these days, whether you're doing organic or whether you're trying to get down in the muck that is Facebook ads these days with the disaster that that has become. You want to take advantage when people actually show up. And if you give people a chance, 1 in 6 will spend more money with you if you send them a personalized, targeted, relevant upsell offer, which is what OneClick Upsell makes it super easy to do. You can do it pre-purchase, post-purchase, give them lots of different options. It makes it incredibly easy, and they've helped store owners generate over $200 million in additional revenue. So if you want a slice of that and you want to get started, you can get started really quickly with them in just a few minutes, get your first upsell up and running. Check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today, it's just me riding solo on the show. This is going to be part of our kind of a summer mini-series at this point. Got, I don't know, 2 or 3 of these dripping out over the end of July, dog days of August episode, where I'm going to be talking about some of the things that maybe aren't perfectly related to e-commerce, but maybe some of them bleed a little bit more into that amazing lives part of the mission, but that I think are interesting, I think almost certainly apply to most of the entrepreneurs listening, and that I've, just had some thoughts rolling around recently on and thought would be fun to talk about. And today's episode is going to be talking about, of course, you saw the title, about thoughts on tracking your net worth and spending. So why should you do that if you're not doing it, or even if you are, like good reasons to do it, my personal experience with it, how I actually do that, the things I include and don't include on the net worth side, on the spending side, and also, a few things to calculate how you're doing and kind of benchmarking. So just kind of an overall discussion of this. I think it's an interesting topic. It doesn't really get talked about a whole lot. I haven't heard of anyone really talking about it. So yeah, hopefully it's not too gauche and we're going to dive in and do it. I think it'll be kind of fun, but I'm also a finance geek. So we'll see how this goes. So why consider tracking your net worth? I had this list at the bottom because it seemed really, really superficial, but I think I got to be, to be intellectually honest here, I got to move it to the top. First off, it's fun, right? Like, we're entrepreneurs. We like to keep score. It is not the end all be all. It's not even one of the most important things in life. It is important, but it's fun. It's a fun thing to do to see over time. And so I'm going to just, I'm going to own it, put that first and foremost. It's a fun thing to do as an entrepreneur when oftentimes that's at least one of the things that we use to kind of measure our progress on the entrepreneurial front. Again, not the only thing, but it's fun to do. So I'm going to put that one number one. It's fun. Secondly, it makes you come to terms with your spending habits. Because honestly, if I ask you, hey, how much did you spend last month? How much did you spend last year? I would bet that 90% of people listening do not know. I would bet 90% of people probably don't know within multiples of thousands of dollars how much they spent over the last couple months or so. And so it gives you a sense of, it helps you come to terms with your spending habits. And the other thing too is it can help you really see gaping, massive bleeding parts where you're just bleeding money in your life. And I'm a big fan of spending and, spending on areas that give you a ton of value and benefit or give others a lot of value and benefit. But that being the key term, value and benefit, oftentimes we spend in areas that don't bring that much, value to our lives, but we do it because it's easy or convenient. We're not thinking or not noticing it. So tracking this kind of stuff makes you come to terms with your spending habits. Here's a big one. Understands how, gives you a sense of how close you are and if you're making progress towards being financially free. And I define financial freedom as passive income that covers your monthly burn. And not passive income from your business, but passive income from investments you don't have to touch that are going to cover your burn. I'm thinking like stocks, real estate that's managed, things like that. So why is it important to, why would you want to know that? A couple of things. One, it's not because we all want to retire and go sit on a beach somewhere. If you're listening to this, the chances of you being able to sit down and chill out for 8 years on a beach drinking pina coladas are probably pretty small, because the people that are able to build up wealth and get to that position often are people who enjoy it, who are driven, they enjoy the process. So it's not about, you know, getting to a point where you can just, you know, totally retire early and fire movement and not have to do anything. That's not the reason. I think the reason is because once you become financially free in that sense, or if you know you are moving in that direction, you make better decisions. You make better long-term decisions, I think. I think it's easy with a business to oftentimes have risk and fear cloud decisions that we make and help us, you know, and we make suboptimal decisions. When you know that you have your burn covered, when you know that maybe even if you're not even, you know, not there yet, but you're on that journey making progress and increasingly you're seeing larger and larger portions of your monthly expenses being covered by those passive investments, then you make better decisions the closer you get to that. And I think that's the big thing here. It gives you a sense of progress, but also increasingly you don't operate out of fear. Fourth reason is it helps us as entrepreneurs celebrate wins and growth. We are bad at this. We're so bad at this, right? Like I was reading through some of my journals recently, and I had this one journal a couple of years ago that was like in 5 years, I want to be at these different metrics or have these things accomplished or have these financial goals. And it had been a couple of years and I looked at it and 3 out of the 4 had been accomplished in a 2 out of a 5 year time frame. And I never even realized that that's where I was mentally 2 years ago, because we're so good at just readjusting to where we are and then setting the next milestone, right? Like, I don't have to tell you this. If you're listening to this, you almost certainly are horrific at this. And I never celebrated it. And it didn't give me a chance. And even more than that, I didn't fully realize the progress that had been made. And so when you're tracking your net worth, again, this is only one metric on money is not, you know, when you think about all the other ones, friendships, think about family, health, your faith, all these other things, like all of those are more important than money, but it's a great way to be able to celebrate the wins in those money categories. Because you see, you have a ledger of how was I doing? If you're doing this the way that I'm going to talk about here, you can go back 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 6 months and see how that net worth is growing. And then finally, tracking your net worth helps you put your latent resources to work. We're going to talk about how I break this down. And if you look at this and you're tracking this and you say, wow, I've had all this money in cash for a while. Huh, I've heard all this news about inflation going way up, 10%. Man, I've been sitting on this for 9 months here. It reminds you that you have resources, you may have resources that are just sitting and kind of wasting away. And it's a good little, you know, knock on the door on a quasi-regular basis saying like, hey, all right, how are you deploying your resources? Are you doing a good job of it? Don't let them just sit. Not everyone's going to have that issue. A lot of times having access to cash is probably, it's probably more of an issue than not, but than letting it just kind of fade away. But definitely there's people I know that have money that just sits and doesn't do anything. All right. So those are the reasons why I think you should be tracking your net worth and spending on a somewhat reasonable, you know, regular basis. So my personal experience, I've been doing this about 4 years now, tracking my net worth for about 4 years, and started tracking my kind of monthly and annual spending probably for the last year or so. And we'll kind of get into both of those different parts and how I do that. Let's start with kind of the tracking the net worth part of things. So there's a bunch of ways you can do this. You can use online calculators. You can use things like Wealthfront or Betterment or Mint was, I don't know if Mint's still popular anymore, but you can use these kind of things. I've used them in the past. I've stopped because partially one, it's always weird when you put your entire net worth into this online system and you just share all of your financial credentials. I'm sure it's probably secure, but it's a little weird when you're just, you know, feeding the cloud everything you need to pretty much just, you know, destroy you financially. That's probably a minor issue. But the other one is a lot of times like the syncing doesn't always sync up quite properly. There's something I just love about a good old-fashioned spreadsheet that is easy to manipulate, and change and tweak for your situation. So I just use a spreadsheet, and I have it set up for the net worth tracking. Let me pull it up right now. We can talk through it. So I have on this one sheet I just got, on one side of it, I have what I call a personal balance sheet that lists all of my cash accounts, all my investment accounts, all my real estate accounts, and then kind of a net worth at the bottom with liabilities, and they're deducted out. And it's not formatted like if you're you know, a traditional balance sheet is, you know, assets on one side is equal to your liabilities plus your equity. I just keep it simple. So I list all my cash accounts in a row, and I have total cash. And then I have a little line that says less obligations. So this could be, you know, big tax checks I know I have coming up, large expenses I haven't accounted for personally. And so it deducts out of that, so I can kind of do a kind of a net cash available deducted, you know, less any pending expenses that I know are on the horizon. So I have my cash account there. Then I have investments. So everything that you've invested in outside of real estate. So, you know, stocks, retirement accounts, cryptocurrencies, private investments, anything like that. So then you've got your cash, you've got your total investments, and then you have real estate. So a list of all of the real estate that you own, less any mortgage balances, and then you have kind of total real estate equity. And then you can also have a section for liabilities. You know, if you have any outstanding debt outside of your real estate, student loans, whatever that is, business debt potentially. And so then you have pretty straightforward kind of just a net worth at the very bottom of that. So it's all of your assets minus any liabilities is your net worth. Pretty straightforward. So what do you actually include in here? One thing you notice I didn't include vehicles. I didn't include the value of my couch. I didn't include my incredibly valuable wardrobe, which I don't think I could give it away. No one would wear on my old tattered, e-commerce SaaS shirts that makes up probably like 70% of my wardrobe. I don't include any of those things. Appliances, toys, cars, recreational vehicles, things like that. I don't think those are good to have, but those are kind of, you know, most of those are required for life, right? So I don't put those, I'm interested in like investments and liquid net worth and real assets. That's what I'm tracking. It's also easier to track those. It also doesn't trick you into thinking like, oh, if I go out and buy a sweet $100,000 RV or something like that, that's actually an asset, because it's not really, it's a toy. Personal preference, but I don't put that on there. Do you track the value of your personal residence? I do. I put that in there. I don't think of it as an investment. I don't think it is. I think it's, you need a place to live. And if you spend a lot more on a fancy house or a house that, you know, is more than you need, it's not an investment. That's just choosing to spend money on living in a nicer place. So yeah, I don't look at it as an investment, but I do put it on the net worth kind of side of things. Do I value the value of my current business? I don't. I also don't put my business in there as well. Again, kind of a personal decision, but businesses are, you know, they're volatile. Things can happen with them. The value can go down. The earnings can go down. I just feel better. I love seeing the net worth without the value of the business. The other thing too is, if you want to get a sense of how you're doing, and you put, for most of us, our businesses are going to make up the majority, if not the vast majority, of our net worth. And so I don't want to see that skewed in there. I'm more interested in a real kind of, you know, tangible value assets, liquid assets on the business side or the non-business side. So I don't want that skewing in there. So I don't put the value of you know, my businesses, my main business in there. So that's how you track things. And I just kind of I'll go through manually update all of the accounts, get a number, and then I will put it kind of in this data table just to the left of that kind of personal balance sheet. And I've got dates going back about 4 years here. And so you can see over time how that net worth has changed. A couple kind of nuances here. One, I always include not just the net worth, but the two portions, the two biggest portions that make that up. First, cash and investments, and then home equity or real estate values that you have in there, less any kind of debt you have on them. So you can get a sense, like, if your net worth is going up, hey, am I doing a great job of creating cash and investments? Or is just the real estate market at all-time highs? So you can kind of see it, you know, get a sense of what's driving that net worth. The other thing I love to do is I love to put my net worth goal right next to that number every time and have a distance to goal column. So every time I update it, it shows me, hey, how far am I from my personal net worth goal? Which I think is interesting. It's very motivating to see when you see that progress being made there. Obviously not going to get into the numbers and the details, but I just think, because I think people are curious, I would be curious in terms of how net worth is broken up for us. So on that spreadsheet, probably about 15% of net worth is in cash, 34% is in public stocks, mostly index funds, a handful, two or three individual stocks that I think are really interesting, but 90% of it is in index funds, about 10% in private investments across operational e-commerce companies outside of my own and also some SaaS companies through ECF Capital, 8% in crypto and about 33% in real estate. So I have no idea if that's a good combo for you. I can't give you any financial advice. I'm not a professional. I like that mix a lot. It feels like it's kind of been a crazy 6 months and things have definitely dropped, but yeah, I don't know. I feel good about that. I feel like it's a good combination between upside diversification and also some upside on the risk side as well. Hey, Andrew here with a little aside. If you're listening, you're obviously interested in e-commerce. And so I want to make sure you know about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands at e-commerce fuel. And the secret sauce, like you might guess, is it's limited to people who own stores, who are in the trenches, practitioners doing this stuff. It's a very curated community, which has three big benefits. First, it means everyone inside can help get fast on-point answers to your most important questions. If you're trying to decide if SMS is a tool worth rolling out, if you just got suspended on Amazon, if you're trying to hire a director of e-commerce, these are all things that either people have experience with or have gone through in the forums. And if you post and ask questions, you'll get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes, as well as being able to tap into close to a decade of archive discussions. So you get a lot of insights, fast answers to pressing questions. You get to plug into an amazing network of over 1,100 experienced e-commerce entrepreneurs. So you can reach out to people if you're in e-commerce fuel. Our members are incredibly giving and generous. And so if you want to reach out to someone with expertise, oftentimes we'd be happy to share what they know. If you're, you know, traveling, hopefully when traveling is a common thing again, a lot of our members would hit in the city, you know, DC, Dallas, Sydney, Australia, you know, London, wherever it is, and be able to have someone on the ground you can connect with or maybe grab a beer with. It's an amazing network. And then finally, we've got a huge user-generated review library with over 10,000 reviews on agencies, software, e-commerce software that you can tap into to avoid costly hiring and software mistakes. Nothing is worse than spending 3 months with an agency to onboard only to find out that a bunch of people already tried them and they were horrible and they wasted a bunch of your money and your life. So those are the kind of things you can avoid tapping into the unbiased reviews and experiences of our members with our software directory. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, you should join us. ecommercefuel.com. You can learn more. You can apply for membership there. We also have a 5x ROI guarantee. If you own a 7- or 8-figure brand and your membership fees for our community don't pay for themselves at least 5 times over the course of the first year, we'll refund it completely as well as send you $1,000 just for the wasted time. So ecommercefuel.com, check it out. We'd love to have you apply, potentially join the community. All right, back to the discussion. Let's talk about spending. So that's the net worth side. How do you track your spending in a way that you actually do it? Because I, for years on the personal side of spending, we tried, like, you don't need a budget. It's kind of this software that lets you categorize everything. We've tried, you know, we've used Mint in the past and other similar services to try to categorize all of our spending. And man, it didn't work very well. The automated functions, a lot of times they wouldn't categorize things properly, or it was a lot of work to do. There's a lot of friction involved. And so recently I've come up with a system I like a lot better. It's a very kind of in keeping with the keep it simple, stupid kind of KISS methodology. And really the goal with your spending is just, what's my burn rate? How much am I spending? Like, how much am I spending per month, per year? And how close am I, how is that impacting my ability to hit my goals? And so what I do now is I just go and, without categorizing, I take a dump of my spending, our family's spending, and get a sense for what is our burn, how much money in total have we spent over the last year? And I tend to do that on a trailing 12 months basis. And so I'll go into Wells Fargo, I'll export that huge dump. There's really only one or two accounts we do all of our personal spending out of, either, you know, from a bank or paying off, you know, cards or things like that. And that makes it a little bit easier. But yeah, I'll just dump it out. And here's what I'll exclude. So things that I'll export the list in Excel, and then I'll go through and delete the following. Any money that we are saving personally for retirement, or just in general putting into savings, I will pull that out, because that's not an expense, that's saving, right? So I pull that out. Any big one-time projects, we had a ton of home renovations this year, were one-time projects. So I pull that out because that's not an ongoing thing. So I anything like that, any transfers I pull out, things I will even, like if we're saving for our kids' college, I feel like it's a real expense for the next, you know, 10 plus years. So that stays in. Anything like that's going to stay in. So I go through and then you have this list of all of these transactions and then go to the bottom and tally them all up. And I'm not categorizing them. I'm not trying to think, you know, it's very simple. It's very high level and it gives me a number over the 12 months. And that is your burn rate. That's our burn rate. How much are you spending per year? And if you do this, you are going to be surprised at best, probably shocked at worst. I was. I saw that number and I was like, no, that's what we're spending per year. And I feel like we definitely have some indulgences in life, but I feel like I don't know. Maybe everyone feels like this. I don't need the bougie coffee, right? Like pretty low. I bike to work most days. Again, I have my indulgences for sure, but I don't, we're not going out and eating caviar. And I was shocked. We do have three kids, which is probably equivalent to eating like three cans of caviar a day, I would imagine. But so that's probably what's killing us. But I was really surprised to see that. And I think the only thing worse than knowing how much you are spending is not knowing and just living in total ignorant bliss until you run out of money or realize you've wasted hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of dollars over the last decade or whatever it is. So anyway, be surprised. But it's a good thing to do. And then, you know, as you see that number, you can kind of start going in and looking at the expenses and diving in as you need to, but it's a really useful exercise to do. Okay, so why do the spending part? Well, we talked about at the top a little bit, but one of the most valuable things I think about is when you want to get to that kind of financial freedom number, and again, not to retire, but so you can make better decisions, it's defined by your passive income covering your burn. So your passive income covering how much you spend per year. And so this is why both of them are important. You want to think, how close am I to having my net worth generate enough income to cover this spend that I have? And so there's two ways you can do it. One, you can reduce your spend, of course, and the other one is increase your assets. So how do you calculate this? I have a little spreadsheet as well, a separate one. I use a 4% rule on my liquid investments, right? So very ballpark, I'm sure people will argue with me, but kind of this general idea is 4%. If you have if you have $1 million portfolio, generally you can pull out 4% of that. So $40,000 per year in perpetuity in most cases, and between inflation, the amount you lose to inflation, your weakened purchasing power, and also, you know, the increase in the investment value, you'll be able to do that, indefinitely. So 4%, I think, is a nice baseline rule. It doesn't have to be perfect, but it works for me. And then I compare that. So I have a chart and I'll look at 4%. Okay, what's 4% of my liquid, you know, the investments that I have, plus any, you know, real estate or rent that's coming in or any other income. And I chart that with, okay, what's my burn? What is our family's annual burn every year personally? And you can see, and I track this kind of month over month. I got this from this book called Your Money and Your Life. And you get the sense of how big the gap is. And it's fun because you can see the gap can start big and it gets narrower and narrower. Maybe sometimes you have it like start to diverge. Nothing is worse than seeing like divergence where your spending goes up and your investments come down. That's a rough one. But it's this very visual reminder illustration of how you're doing, which is helpful for me. Charts are always good. One thing to think through is make sure you're doing this also on a tax considered basis. So if you're earning, you know, a bunch of money, you're getting taxed at normal income rates. If you are kind of calculating your financial freedom number, you're going to be doing this on a different tax basis because most of the money you're pulling out is going to be taxed at long-term capital gains rates versus earned income rates, which is substantially lower. So, I mean, if you're pulling out $150,000 from a portfolio of stocks and investments and things like that, you're probably only paying $10,000 in taxes at the federal level, which is wildly lower than you'd be paying if you were earning that income. So something to keep into account and take into account when you're calculating that number. So, and again, this is not to say how, you know, when can I go retire on the beach? Maybe that's your thing. Again, I'm guessing most people it's going to be more about, am I making progress? Can I make, you know, if everything goes just south and the whole business just, you know, bursts in flame tomorrow, which is something that I have struggled with as an entrepreneur. I know other entrepreneurs always worries about just, you know, the wheels coming off the bus at any moment, even if things are going pretty well. It's this fear in our mind and this exercise when, you know, making progress on this front, it helps alleviate those fears and I think make better decisions. So anyway, that's kind of the high level thoughts on everything. You know, why you should be doing this, how to track your net worth, how to track your spending, what works for me, and then kind of that kind of cool kind of freedom chart that you can track your monthly burn with your 4% earnings on the passive income plus any other passive income you have maybe from real estate. So I have like a little, David Wallace. The Braveheart guy. I can't remember his name. William Wallace? I think it's William Wallace. You know, I have a little picture of him, the freedom, on my little chart. So as those two numbers, kind of make progress, it's kind of a fun thing to look at and track when you do this. So I do this, maybe sometimes I'll do it every couple months. Usually it's more like, 3 to 6 months tracking it, but it's a cool thing to do for a lot of different reasons, not just because you want to, be wealthy and swim in money and be Scrooge McDuck diving all your coins. I don't think that's the goal here, but like I talked about at the top, a lot of good other reasons to do it. Finally, in closing here, a few good kind of books to read and further resources as you're thinking about this kind of stuff. The first one, The Psychology of Money. I've talked about this on the show before. It's from Morgan Housel. I've been in finance a lot. It's actually kind of funny. I was walking downstairs just to get a little breath of fresh air today and ran into my finance professor from my college days and walked with him to grab some coffee and back and caught up. Haven't seen him in probably a decade plus. It was super cool. Total random aside, but I've been in finance for 20 plus years and this is probably one of, if not the best financial books I have ever read. Phenomenal book. Highly recommend it. One of the biggest takeaways for me in it was stop moving your goalposts. It's so easy, like I mentioned at the top, to make progress and decide you want something more or that you're not going to be happy with what you have. And that is the biggest hurdle anyone trying to improve financially is going to face. So real fine line here, right? Like, again, we're entrepreneurs. We love building businesses. We love keeping score. But I think there's a difference between keeping score because you want to know how you're doing and it's fun and keeping score because I'm going to be happy when I hit X. And almost never are you going to be happy when you hit X. So anyway, just a good thing to keep in mind, realizing how hard it is to stop moving your goalposts and to try to be better about that. The second book was a book called Die with Zero. And I'm sure this has got talked about a little bit more recently. The title says it all. Whoever they had as a copywriter, well done. The whole point though is if you are piling up a bunch of money so that you can die happily in a great nursing home, probably a pretty suboptimal use of your resources. Their point is you should die with as close to zero as possible, because either A, you should use that money to live a great, fulfilling, rich life for you and the people you love, or B, you should give that money away. And the sooner you give it away, the sooner people will be able to do good things that help, that help humanity and other great causes with that money. So stop hoarding your money. Use it now. And also that the longer you wait to use your money, it has diminishing returns for most people. Really good book. One of the things that it really encouraged me to do was to start doing more things now and not wait for them. Coldplay was coming through Phoenix this year and always wanted to see Coldplay. Not a crazy mega fan or anything, but A, I think I like their music. I think it's good. And B, I've heard they put on a really good live show, like phenomenal live show in terms of production value. And they were coming through Phoenix. I live about an hour and a half away from there in Tucson. And I saw it and I was like, oh man, oh, so cool. They're coming through Phoenix. Maybe, one day I'm going to go check out that show. I should do that sometime. That's so cool. They're coming through. Read this book. I had read this book about a week or two before. And after about 5 seconds, I was like, what is wrong with me? Like, what is wrong with my brain? Why don't I go right now? And I wasn't going because it was a little inconvenient. We had to line up childcare. There was a cost to it that wasn't cheap. Wasn't horrible, but it wasn't cheap. But went to that show, figured out the childcare. Andy and I went, had a great night. Saw a phenomenal show. And, I think about it probably once a week now when other songs come on or Andy and I talk about it. An amazing investment as a result of that book. So the goal is not to make money and store it up. The goal is to have amazing experiences, live a rich life, help other people. And those are the goals that are much more important. So Die with Zero, strongly recommend it. And then final recommendation is the book of Ecclesiastes. And even if you're not someone who's in the Judeo-Christian faith, or even if you're someone who has, real issues with those faiths potentially, it's still a real classic example of someone who had everything in the world wealth-wise. Most people think King Solomon wrote this thing. One of the richest kings of his time, probably richer in contemporary terms, like Elon Musk, and just was miserable, right? Like, and it's a really good reminder that wealth is not going to buy happiness. Wealth is not this thing that is going to fix problems and something you should, the thing to aspire to. And it may be kind of strange coming on the heels of an episode about tracking your net worth, but I think you can have both, right? Like you can do this. This can be something that's on your radar that you think about, but you don't make it the end all be all. And I think that's important. So anyway, totally non-traditional episode here, way outside of the normal e-commerce framework, but kind of fun and a little bit different. Hope you enjoyed it, got a little bit of value out of it, and it's useful for you. So I wish you the best in hitting return when you calculate that monthly / annual burn rate on your spreadsheet if you go through with it. It's always a fun one, always surprising. Good luck. Thanks for listening. Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the E-Commerce Fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help, access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that you know founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to one-click upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.